Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 31, Text 41. Yamanyate patim mohan manmayam rishabhayatim stritvam stri sangata prapto vitapatya griha pradam yamanyate patim mohan manmayam rishabhayatim Stritvam Stri Sangata Prapto Vitapatya Griha Pradam. Please chant. Word for word. Yam, which manyate, she thinks, patim, her husband, mohat, due to illusion, matmayam, my Maya, in the form of a man. Oh, sorry. Wrong, my mistake. My Maya. Then Rishabha, in the form of a man. Ayatim, coming. Stritvam, the state of being a woman. Stri Sangata, from attachment to a woman. Prapta, obtained. Vita, wealth. Apatya, progeny. Griha, house. Pradam, bestowing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with a form of a woman, a living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with a form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. Translation, please repeat. A living entity who,
as a result of
attachment
to a woman in his previous life,
has been endowed
with a form of a woman,
foolishly looks upon Maya
in the form of a man,
her husband,
as the bestower of wealth,
progeny, house,
and other material assets.
Purport. From this verse it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in his or her previous life. And due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. A man gets his next life's birth according to what he thinks at the time of death. If someone is too attached to his wife, naturally he thinks of his wife at the time of death, and in his next life he takes the body of a woman. Similarly, if a woman thinks of her husband at the time of death, naturally she gets the body of a man in the next life. In the Hindu scriptures, therefore, woman's chastity and devotion to man is greatly emphasized. A woman's attachment to her husband may elevate her to the body of a man in her next life. But a man's attachment to a woman will degrade him, and in his next life he will get the body of a woman. We should always remember, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Every living entity, being classified as energy, is supposed to be originally a woman, or one who is enjoyed. In the body of a man, there's a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches. There's less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to women and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. A woman is generally fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when their husband supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated, but the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritual realization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restriction of association may be slackened, because if a man's and woman's attachment is not to each other but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement to reach the abode of Krishna. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who seriously takes to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life or a woman or of the less intelligent classes, such as the mercantile or laborer class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. Both man and woman should be attached to the service of the Lord. Then there's the possibility of liberation from material entanglement for both of them. Om Aginati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhik Vrindavanishvare Vrishabhanu Sure Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarupyastya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gora Bhakta Binda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you for allowing me this service opportunity of trying to share some small insights I might have on this topic. Please excuse my feet. I'm okay, but don't mind me having... It's okay? Yeah. Okay. So, we've been hearing so many wonderful classes on this topic, and it's going on for a long time. So it must be a serious topic, no? And we understand that Srimad Bhagavatam is an impartial shastra. Srimad Bhagavatam impartially just wants to present the truth to anyone. There's no discrimination. Because as Prabhupada was saying in the purport, actually we're all marginal energy, no? We're in this material world, so we're all conditioned souls. We're all conditioned. The male body has so many conditionings. The female body has so many conditionings. Just as well, there's only two genders. Just imagine if there was a third one or a fourth one, how complicated it would get, right? But somehow or other, we can understand the men. They're quite happy just to do nothing. So the female energy has to come to get them motivated, isn't it? That's what makes the whole world turn round and round. So we have this situation of male and female. And I've been so happy to hear the classes, and I feel really insignificant, I have to be honest. I feel shy, I feel like a crow amongst swans, because there's been such beautiful classes. And when I thought about that, I was thinking, I'm really so happy about that. Because I come from a time when I joined Krishna consciousness, you know, some nearly 40 years back. In Vrindavan, the atmosphere was a little bit different then. And so in the meantime, to see how learned devotees are in the Shastras, male and female, how more understanding and mature the application of these teachings have become in ISKCON, we've definitely grown, you know, ISKCON as an institution and individually and communally, we've gone through so many different growing pains, which is a good thing because it's pain that propels us. So, you know, when I was a very new bhaktin, it was, sadly, it's a fact. You can read it also about it in Yamuna's book. There was sort of an element of fanaticism against the women, which was very unfortunate because we can understand that those women that come to Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada teaches, they're the most intelligent because they've understood their conditioning and now they're coming to serve Krishna. Similarly, those men that come to Krishna consciousness, they're the most intelligent. They're very rare. Vasudevam, Savamiti, right? Those that actually come to surrender to Krishna. So many come to Krishna for so many reasons. But those that come to surrender to Krishna is very rare. So we're in a very unique, in a very special situation. So this needs to be dealt with delicately. I remember being a new devotee and oftentimes being in tears, being left in tears because I genuinely came to apply myself to these principles, and I was so happy, I was so relieved to come out of this material world of exploitation, especially as a young woman, constantly being judged and evaluated as a possible object of enjoyment. I was so tired of that. And I came to Krishna consciousness so relieved, so happy, you know, such an oasis. And then within the movement to have some, you know, very derogative and fanatic dealings and classes, it would leave me in tears. But it is verses like this one who immediately set me on the right path. There was no malice, there's no anger. Actually, if anything, there's sadness. And we can pray. You know, if somebody doesn't quite come up to the mark, we pray, because unfortunately we have seen those that are behaving in a neophyte way, in a fanatic way, often that backfires on them. If you're committing a sin, if you're committing an aparad, actually that aparad itself will burn you, you see. So we have to pray for each other's well-being in Krishna consciousness. So and those tears, they were good because they were for my purification. Because I could understand, in a previous life, according to this, chances are I was in the form of a man. And I must have given some kind of abuse because now it's coming back to me. You see? So I understood in a way so many things instantly, that I'm not this body, that that this body is given to me according to my karma. And with it, along with it, so many sufferings and things will come. And I have to be humble. So it immediately puts me in a frame of mind of Trinada Pisanichina. So actually as a woman, it was a good exercise because I could learn humility. I could learn service attitude. I could learn tolerance. I could learn so many things. And most importantly, to go deeper into the philosophy, because I understood, okay, I'm not a woman, I'm not this body. So what is Bhagavatam trying to teach me? So it's a dangerous situation. We're all conditioned souls. Even in this temple room, maybe our consciousness is a little bit more elevated than the mass of people outside. But really, most of us, we call ourselves aspiring devotees. isn't it? We're attempting, we're making the attempt. So Shastra is giving so many warnings. Here, Prabhupada is saying that usually the woman, she wants to accumulate, you know, as the she sees. Here we can clearly see how the form of a man is Maya for the woman, and the form of the woman is Maya for the man. It clearly states this, right? And for the woman, this attachment to accumulate, because that's her nature, because her body functions to have progeny. So she needs facility for that. She wants to expand. You know, Prabhupada says this female body is meant to produce flesh. You know, we're producing babies. So along with that, so many needs come. Like that. And there's actually a sloka, I forgot to note it, but I actually read, please excuse me, I can't exactly remember now, where Prabhupada says, if the husband is a Vaishnava and of character, then even if the woman is in this mentality, but she faithfully serves her husband, and she doesn't practice so diligently herself, but she just does this dharma of faithfully serving her Vaishnava husband, that's all right. Her husband will deliver her. That because she's following her dharma, Krishna will cover her tracks. Do you understand? Because it's the principle of following dharma. But if the husband is not of that character, she's not obliged. That doesn't apply, Prabhupada clearly states. Like in Bhagavad Gita, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says, obligation is not binding if the result is bad. So what result are we hoping to achieve? At the bottom of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, sometimes in Krishna consciousness, these restrictions can be slackened. Why? Because both, or everyone involved, they clearly understand and they are practicing and applying the process of bhakti. So as soon as somebody has a higher goal in mind, then there's a common interest, there's a trust, there's a combined level of consciousness. So here, Prabhupada refers to the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Antakale tamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram, no? That whatever you think of at the time of death, that is where you will go. So this human form of life is meant not to keep the women happy or to make the husband satisfied. This human life is meant to make your attachments to the lotus feet of Krishna. We have to be very careful about that. We don't want just happy Vanashram Vedic life. That's all good and fine. But unless there is the ultimate goal that by my activity I'm actually developing attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord, then you might not make it, right? Because it's really only the lotus feet of the Lord that ultimately can be your shelter, that ultimately can protect you from death, isn't it? It's just like the gopis when they came running in the middle of the night, they rejected all dharma, which is completely against Vedic injunctions. They completely threw it all away. They left their husband, they left their babies, they left their cooking, they weren't even dressed, and they came running in the middle of the night. According to Vedic dharma, a woman never leaves her home. Prabhupada says how in his early days, his mother was carried in a palanquin just to even go to the neighbor. This is Vedic dharma, you see. So the gopis, they left all of that. And when Krishna gave all these arguments, hey, what are you guys doing here? Go home. There's this beautiful exchange, this beautiful conversation going on. And then the gopis question him, what kind of lover are you? And then there's this statement in the Krishna book in the introduction to the Rasa dance. Actually, we only serve our husbands and our babies and our family because you are there as the super soul. You understand? You see? So it's just like when Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, before they met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were engaged in the Navab service in Ramkeli. And they felt very ashamed of their position, but they felt the need to do it, otherwise the Hindu society would have been persecuted. So it was actually the mother they had heard about Lord Chaitanya, and they really wanted, and they understood he's the Supreme Lord, and they really wanted to meet with him. That earnestness, that eagerness in the heart to meet the Lord, right? Even the mother was ashamed. Usually mothers are very happy. Their son, oh, so successful, big position, so much money, fancy palaces, right? Who wouldn't want that? But the mother, being a Vaishnavi, actually she was ashamed that my sons are engaged in this way, you see. So she suggested, why don't you write a letter? And they wrote several letters, and never was a reply. And then only one time, finally, a reply came back, and it said, if a woman has a paramour, she even more diligently engages in her household activities, not to raise suspicion. What is this kind of a reply? What is the Lord saying? We should be saying Dharma, you know, we have to follow Dharma, Dharma, Dharma. Now he's telling us to throw it, act irreligiously. What is this, you see? So the moral here is, the secret behind it is, yes, we do our Dharma, but our internal attachment is where? Where? You sure? Yeah? You had to think for a minute? Your internal attachment, your paramour, your lover, is Krishna. Right? So anyhow, there's so many points, and really we could discuss for hours together. Again, the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is really only two purposes. Srimad Bhagavatam speaks very strong words sometimes. And that is to completely cut our illusion. Just snap out of it. You're a conditioned soul. You're not this body. You don't belong to this material world. Right? Come back home. And the second purpose is to give Krishna prema, because that's the only way you can do it. You see, we have attachment. Attachment means what? We have our love in places that's misplaced. My bank balance, my family, my car. I had this ride in this fancy car the other day. I couldn't believe it. I've been out of Australia for a while, and I went inside this car, and I was thinking, wow, this is like sitting inside a discotheque. All these lights and like that, you know, very, looks more like a spaceship to me. You know, like, is it really necessary to drive me from the temple to some devotee's house? Is that really necessary? You see? What's our attachment? What are we praying for? You see? Isn't it? So strong words are there. So don't mind me. I'm reminding myself by speaking this. Really, when we're speaking, we're preaching to ourselves. So there's this strong thing that if a woman becomes attached to a man, she becomes elevated. Ayanda Prabhu speaks really strongly about, let the women be in the back. At least they're looking at the men. They'll be, you know, elevated. Like some women, I mean, we're all in-house here, so we can use this kind of language. You know, any outsider like, what is this, right? So we want to be delicate, but yet at the same time, the truth has to be sharp. So what's going on here? And we know Prabhupada, he oftentimes quotes Chanaka Pandit, and he speaks really strongly. You know, he says, you have to understand, now we're speaking about the body, right? The machine. Inbuilt in this female body are seven flaws. Can you remember back in 2000, the year 2000, it was the KY2 bug or something in all the computers, and overnight all the computers were going to crash. Can you remember that? 2000. So similarly, you know, in this body, in this female body, inherently there's flaws. He says, you know, you can't trust a woman or a politician. Some women, I mean, they get really stumbled up about all of this stuff, right? They're liars. They're perpetual liars. Apparently, they have no strength. They present themselves as if they have so much weakness. Oh, the cry. But actually inside, they're very powerful, very strong, very courageous. They're foolish. They're greedy. They're unclean. This is Chanaka Pandit's words, by the way. So we have to think about these things. Bhagavatam says in the 9th canto, women as a class are merciless, cunning. They can't tolerate even a slight offense. I recently had a class by one Prabhu. He says, yes, the women, they can present themselves very shy. I'm so shy. No, Prabhu, I cannot give the class. But if you upset them, like you trot on their tail, whoa, they can speak for hours together. Like that, you see. So for their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious, even kill a husband or brother. So it's heavy language, but sometimes that's what it needs. It makes a knife to cut the ego. Similarly, it gives very strong words against men, the foolishness of being attached to a woman in a materialistic way, no? It even warns in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, if some man is captured by a woman, all his learning, all his Vedic studies, all his sadhana, all his tapasya, finished, spoiled. Be careful. Okay? I think sometimes it's only a woman really that can give this kind of a class. See, we can understand, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 6th canto, because we're mothers, you know? It's a mother's love that's speaking. You understand, isn't it? It's a mother's love that's speaking. So Srimad Bhagavatam, the 6th canto, we know this story. It's a beautiful story of King Chitraketu. He's just out on a joyride. He's just relaxing, having a bit of fun with his wife. Be careful. You see, what can happen? You just relax for a minute. And he's just flying by, and there he sees Shiva and Parvati on his lap. Right? You all know the story. And he's giving a kata. There's so many sadhus are sitting there. And he's just laughing. He says, hey, Shivaji, like a friend. He doesn't mean anything bad. Or it's no malice. He says, Shivaji, what are you doing? You're giving this hari kata and you're sitting with your wife on your lap. He's just laughing. And Shiva, yeah, he's just laughing back. Yeah, cool, dude. I know, you know. It's all right, you know. And they're just laughing. But Parvati, most elevated lady in the universe. Wow. She gets so upset. Her ego reacts. That's why the men, you know, they're well trained in ISKCON. Mataji, yes, Mataji. Yes, Mataji. They know how to behave very sweetly, you know. Because, whoa, beware of the female ego. You know, and then sure enough, she curses him. And Chitraketu, because he's a Vaishnava, he doesn't react. He doesn't react with false ego. He accepts, this must be the injunction of the Lord, and he accepts and like that. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses that point, and he says that even in the higher statuses of life, there's a difference between the understanding of a male and that of a female. It may be clearly said that the understanding of a woman is always inferior to the understanding of a man. There's a different understanding. However elevated a woman may be, her consciousness remains inferior. And however learned a man may be, his senses are always attracted to the opposite sex. That's the deal. That's what we're dealing with. So, back when I was a young girl, still in high school, this whole women's lib came up. You know, equality for women and men. We have to, and I'm pointing that out because we have to be a little bit careful within our movement on this point. We can't be too much this side, we can't be too much, we have to have that balanced attitude. We can't get too liberal. That's the whole thing. So women's lib when I was in high school, I remember that. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, explains actually the whole thing was just orchestrated by the men to exploit the women. And how did they achieve that? Anti-baby pill. That's what it was called at the time. It was completely new. I remember having hot discussions in the classroom, the pros and cons, you know how you do, about anti-baby pill. Already the name, right? Anti-baby. So I want my enjoyment, but I don't want the baby. And at one time, like about 10 or 15 years ago, I took a lot of trouble, some trouble, interviewing elderly men who were teenagers, this is in Australia, who were teenagers, you know, in the 1940s, 50s, like that. Well, how did you guys deal with it? I mean, come on, this sex attraction is not something new to 2017, right? Bhagavatam was spoken 5,000 years ago, so how did you deal with it? And it was very clear to me immediately that the men were of different character. They had that training, they had that education, they had that understanding. Christianity was very strong and still practiced more. And they viewed as the women as future mothers. We just recently had this beautiful memorial at New Govardhan Farm for a very dear devotee who passed away in a very auspicious way, Govardhan Prabhu. And they showed his life story, and he was a young man, 21. His wife was 15. They fell in love. They never had any intimacy until she came of age, 21, and they could get married with the consent of her parents. So that was normal. This is normal. That's how it's supposed to be. What we have now is not advancement, progress. No, it's degradation. You see? So, so we understand that within our movement also, the reason why we have this Bhagavatam class every day is because we have to keep our dial on focus. What is my intention? What is my integrity? What's my motivation in my practice of Krishna consciousness? Even Mohini Murti says to the demons, I'm only a prostitute. How is it you have so much faith in me? She was astonished. She even pointed it out to them under their noses, like, what the hell are you guys doing? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman. And Kasyapa Muni, I'm sorry, I'm going to change the note in a minute. It's the men's. No, I'm just going to, women's turn, then the men. I'm going to change in a minute, so don't worry. So Kasyapa Muni says, you know, we know the story how he got seduced by his wife, no? You might say, oh, big deal, come on. What's the problem? Whoa, big problem. You see? You have to understand, I've learned that. I'm not a very realized person, but if I've learned anything in my time in the Krishna consciousness movement, I've learned this one by Gurudev's grace, and I hope it will stay in my memory forever and evermore, that the minute you disobey the orders of the spiritual master, the moment you disobey the injunctions of the Shastras, the moment you don't take heed of sadhu's advice, be careful. Mm-hmm. Definitely some reaction will come, for sure. It must come, not avoidable. You might say, oh, but I'm chanting Hare Krishna and I'm doing all my rounds and I've done Govardhan Parikram 22 times. And yeah, that's all right. Those things, they will help elevate our consciousness. For what purpose? To understand the Shastras and everything more clearly. Oh my God, yes, I have been a fool. I've made mistakes. And now I should face them and I should rectify myself. Do you understand? Just by covering, smothering over by dilinch sadhana doesn't take away the responsibility of the consequence. That's the thing. So Kasyapa Muni, he's lamenting, alas, I've now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a woman, my wife. Therefore, I'm surely a wretched person who will glide down toward hell. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I'm a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I'm not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. I'm sorry, Prabhu, but this is what always will boil it down to. You have to learn to control your senses no matter what. This is for the ladies, sometimes a little bit hard to take. But like Mataji was saying yesterday, even a woman has a difficult time not to become attracted to women. Not necessarily in a perverse way, but also in the bewildered way. It's a fact. I know. You can look at ladies and think, could become there's sort of like fairy sparkles. And you're like, wow. And you get completely mesmerized. And then if that beautiful face even speaks, well, Anuradha, do you know, I just couldn't come to Mangalati. Like, momentarily you can get bewildered. It's a fact. And we feel more soft. You see? So here it says, Kashyapa Muni says, not me, a woman's face is as attractive and beautiful as a blossoming lotus flower during autumn. Her words are very sweet, and they give pleasure to the ears. But if we study a woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp, like the blade of a razor. In these circumstances, who could understand the dealings of a woman? So these are warnings. And for a woman, of course, to hear these things is a very big test of humility. And like I said, if you're thinking you're a woman, you're less intelligent. So we need to rise above the bodily concept and above the false ego, because the false ego is it's only that where our minds make this illusory combination of body as self. So as long as we're on the bodily level, our false ego will kick in, because the mind wants to satisfy the senses. And we can very, very cleverly, intelligently, even use Krishna consciousness to suit our purposes. We have to be very careful of that. It's like, you know, there's this ongoing joke in ISKCON. Most marriages are made where? In the kitchen. Exactly right, you see. So we have to be careful, huh? So this false ego. And that's male-female, isn't it? We have to rise. I give you an example, just so that you know. I'm definitely a conditioned soul. I'm definitely struggling with these things. And I pray for all of you to please bless me that one day I might make Krishna conscious advancement. It's like, you know, I prided myself, for a better word, that when I was in the Grihastha ashram, yes, yeah, I mean, these principles are beautiful. Actually, women that come to Krishna consciousness, they want to follow these principles. They want to imbibe them, and we need to honor that. And they really want to do the right thing. And they are doing, and they're performing such sacrifices, because mothers will sacrifice, you see. They're performing such sacrifices to follow these principles. So we have to be very honorable, honoring to that. So when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I was the kind of woman, I was never going to get married. Absolutely no way. I couldn't see the point. I couldn't see the point. Why? I'm struggling so much in my own life, just trying to work out, who am I? What am I doing here? What's this all about anyway? And seeing all the suffering in the world, why would I get married and have children and bring them in this kind of environment? Like, forget it, right? Isn't it? You see? So then when I came to Krishna consciousness, then I learned something more about this Vedic culture, which is a very mysterious thing for me, really, because it's something that happened 5,000 years ago and beyond. But I thought, wow, this is nice. This is really nice. I like wearing the sari. As soon as a woman puts a sari on, her consciousness shifts. Definitely. Same with the men, a dhoti and like that. The consciousness shifts, you see. So then I saw those little boys in the Gurukul in Vrindavan. They're so sweet and pure. And suddenly, oh, yeah, I'll have one of those. You see. And then from there it grew. And then, of course, reading Prabhupada's books and being first in the staunch Brahmacharini ashram. And this training was excellent. The training is definitely needed and it's excellent. We have to do it. We have to perform some tapasya and learn the shastra. And then, of course, after some time I was married, and so I was kind of like thinking, yes, I'm going to be the Vedic wife. I speak very sweetly, I'm very shy, I'm chaste, I always defend my husband, I do the cooking very nicely. I was the first one to get up in the morning, the last one to take rest, because we read about all these things about Draupadi and all these devotees, you know, how to be a good wife, about Devahuti. Yes, I can do all of that. I never got angry, you see, until the day my husband accepted renunciation. He decided to leave the Grihastha Ashram and progress further to the Vanaprastha Ashram, the renounced state. And suddenly, you know, 25 or more years of studying and practicing was put to the test, to the ultimate test, to the maximum. Because we can have an understanding intellectually, even in our mind, and we can, you know, emotionally even do so many things. But then when Krishna puts you in the ultimate testing ground, then see what happens. I never knew I could be so angry. I never knew I could be revengeful. I'm sorry to admit, my dandavats to my former husband. All these things become, what do you mean? I served you so nicely. I did this. I chanted faithfully 16 rounds every day. I looked after your children. I was the one to get up in the middle of the night. All right. So our false ego, our duplicity will be tested. Because in Bhagavad Gita, ultimately, the whole point is, we learn in the 16th chapter, it says that lust, anger, greed, they're the gateway to hell. It doesn't say anything about gender there. In fact, we know this body, this material body, is really just a complete embarrassment. Come on, let's face it. He snores, she has smelly breath. Or maybe the other way around. Whatever else, anybody that's been married for a while, you know, the novelties can wear off, right? Isn't it? You know, we're so eager when we're young, so eager to find the right partner. Everybody wants Sita Devi as a wife. Everybody wants Lord Ram as a husband. That's why so many of our women are not married in the moment, actually. They're in their late 30s because they know the Shastra and they're looking for Lord Ram. You see? So in that way, I'm kind of a little bit happy that I was a bit more ignorant about that because at least I just understood what is my lot Krishna will give me. Whatever pain and happiness is my due will come no matter whom I'm married to. For me as a woman, I just need to apply these principles. And then it doesn't matter if you're married to a cardboard cutout, actually. It's a fact. Because Krishna sees the application of your dharma. And he'll cover your tracks. Then one way or another, because life is temporary, husband comes, husband goes. Isn't it? How many husbands have we had? How many wives have we had? How many lifetimes? And it's the principle. It's the principle that, yes, I accept that this process of accepting Dharma is favorable for me to develop bhakti. But the ultimate goal is bhakti. I mustn't get distracted in the process. There's so many things. Prabhupada says the Hindu law, he speaks about Hindu law. Hindu scriptures about chastity and all of these things. I found this really interesting quote many, many years ago. I used to be more fiercely involved in this topic, but I'm a bit more relaxed now because it doesn't hurt me so much anymore. But anyhow, according to the Hindu law, a woman, a cow, and a brahmana are meant for absolute protection. They can do no wrong. If a woman is doing wrong, it means she's not protected. And the problem is not with her. The problem is with her protectors. Do you understand? That's why such a responsibility on men. You can't just shun it. All right, ladies, yes, you can also give class and do kirtan and do this and that. That's all right. But what's your motivation? Do you hear me? You can't shun your responsibility. That if there's something wrong with women, if there's something wrong with the Brahminical class, if there's something wrong with our cows, the protectors are responsible. Prabhupada says, of course, also in the Krishna conscious sense, that the women are the power of inspiration for men. Now, you might buy a toy for your children in the toy shop, but you have to always go somewhere to Crazy Clark's to buy the batteries as well. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So similarly, the men need the power of inspiration. They are like the battery pack in the back. They need that power of inspiration. And in another purport, Prabhupada says, actually, a woman is the energy of the man. So we both need each other. We need the men to lead and to protect, and we need the women to inspire, to give the energy, to go towards bhakti. Don't forget your goal, my dear Prabhu. We're going that away, you see. So, how much are we going for time, Krishna? Hari Bol, please excuse me. Is it mine if I speak another 5-10 minutes? Would that be all right? Yes? Okay. So, I felt inspired to bring up this, by my Gurudev's grace, to bring up this song to your attention by Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Kalyana Kalpataru, the wish fulfilling desire tree. No, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is famous. He's known as the seventh Goswami. He gives all our philosophy perfectly in his songs. All the Krishna conscious philosophy, if you want to teach your children anything, teach them Bengali and teach them all Bhaktivinoda Thakur songs. Everything is there. And they like to sing. You know, these little boys, yes, they're playing these big mridangas. You know, they're having fun. So all the philosophy is there. You don't even have to speak anything. Just sing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. So this Kalyana Kalpataru is described as having three branches. One is Upadesh, instructions. So we're receiving instructions. Daily we're receiving instructions. Now, to solidify those instructions, the next branch must be Upalabdhi, a realization. It's no use just mechanically. I mean, no use is maybe a strong statement. I'll take that back. But you have to be diligent in this area. You don't just blindly, like a robot, mechanically follow routine. That must be followed up by your own realizations, spiritual realizations. We're doing our devotional service for the purpose of purification and realization. Right? And then the next branch, it's ujhasa, which means emotion. Then we need to learn, after getting the instruction, we need to have our realizations, then we need to apply our emotions. Must be. That is the only way you're going to cut your attachments. Do you understand that? Otherwise, your emotions, if you're emotionally anchored with family life, or whatever, your job, your career, then, and you don't learn how to develop deep attachment, deep emotions to Krishna through this process, you may not be successful. We need to apply our emotions. And it comes naturally anyway. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says like that. It's a prayer to the mind. Oh, my dear mind, listen, my dear mind. I don't like this material world at all. It is simply filled with the sufferings of birth, death, disease, and old age. Besides all this misery, tell me what good thing could possibly be found here? We have to be convinced of this, that this material platform is a platform of misery. It's suffering. We have to become convinced of it. And believe me, Krishna will show you. What happiness is here? You know, sometimes people, oh, you just didn't try hard enough. That's why Lord Brahma offers 8,400,000 different species. Well, you just didn't do it right in that form. Let's try the other form. Oh, let's move here. Let's go there. Oh, you didn't marry the right one. Oh, that's a big one now. There, people don't understand how astrologically they're supposed to experience a certain type of karma in their marriage, not happiness ever after. It doesn't exist, not even in the movies anymore. You know, I used to love sitting watching movies with my mother when I was a little girl, you know, movies from the 20s and 30s, and we used to both cry, you know. I mean, these romances, if at all, they only happen in the movies, and they don't even happen in the movies anymore, you see. Wealth, followers, and family members can never really belong to anyone. They're not mine. I'm just a caretaker. For a time, they're together. And afterwards, they all drift apart. Like Prabhupada says, the straws on the water, right? None of these relationships, which you would love to hold on to, will remain for long, O brother. Know it for sure that all these temporary things are flimsy and perishable. What happiness is there in family life? The happiness that you experience in family life is only in relationship to the body. And the body wants to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So if I supply you with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you're my best friend in any relationship. As soon as I fall short of that, there's fighting. You become even enemies. The father hates the son hates the father, the mother divorces the husband divorces the wife, the daughter runs off somewhere else, right? Because some frustration is there. And my revered spiritual master, he gives the analogy. He says it's just like when travelers are traveling and they meet for a night in a motel. You know, you've been driving on a highway and you need to stop. It's coming to the end of the day and you're sleeping in a motel. So many other travelers are there, all the cars are parked. You've never met these people. You don't know them. But somehow or other you're in this motel suddenly together. And you've become best friends. You chat. No, where are you from? Where are you going? And now the illusion to think that I've made these friends, I'm going to stay in this motel. And we're going to be happy together because we've got similar interests and hobbies and this and that. That is an illusion. So similarly, here in this material world, we're just travelers for a time being, spending some time. The lifespan of one living entity in this world is extremely short, and it gradually decays more and more until one beholds Yamaraj hovering nearby. And I can suddenly, as you get older, you can really see, wow, time is just going really fast. It really is going like really fast now. It's kind of frightening. And it's no use looking back and lamenting, oh, I wished I had this, I wished I had that. It's gone. So many opportunities and things have come and been presented to you. Well, for the good or for the bad, worse, you've either used them properly or misused them, and it's gone. Time's running by. Afflicted with continuous diseases and lamenting in heartbroken grief, his consciousness thus degrades more and more. Finally, one meets his downfall, and he again suffers the calamity of separation from his dear kinsmen. At the time of death, you're thinking of your family. That's where it's taking you. You might be a husband attached to your wife, but in your next life, she might come as your son to give you hell. I've seen it. You see? So just here, my dear brother, don't go for this mixed pain and pleasure of so-called material happiness, for it is actually the source of all your troubles. If this is the real situation, then why have you become the slave of Maya just to taste this miserable so-called happiness? Do you realize what you've done? If you become the slave of Maya, then you will only rob yourself of the eternal treasure waiting for you, the supreme goal of life, which is Krishna prema, bhakti, devotion. So we're here to develop devotion. Just become a little thoughtful for once and reflect back on your own life story. How many demonic temptations motivated you? How many demonic temptations motivated you? We have to be honest. This constant self-analysis is so important. What's motivated me? Why am I thinking now in this way? Why am I speaking in this way? Why am I acting in this way? We have to take responsibility on all levels. I actually used to think, well, you know, I think it was Yamuna Acharya who said, let me never take birth as a woman, right? And I'm thinking, well, let me never take birth as a man. Because I look at the men and I'm thinking, my God, what hope is there? There's such responsibility, so much burden to take care responsibly of their wife and their children, their job, their bills, the this, the that. Like, it's such a gigantic task. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, at least as a woman it's easy. You know, I can just hide behind their man and just blame him. You know what I mean? But the men, they've got such a weight on their head, no? Alas, never having once considered the purpose or goal of human existence, such a person wastes his entire life just like a dog or a pig. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words. Then at the time of death, being cheated out of many means of deliverance, he laments bitterly and burns in the life of repentance. So this repentance, this point of repentance, we have to come to in Krishna consciousness. That's what it's actually all about. And we've been taught that by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, to cry. It's not that he's repentful over sinful life. He's repentful over separation for Radha and Krishna, of course. He's in the mood of Radharani, feeling intense separation for Lord Krishna. So similarly, we have this, if we at all lament, we lament that I've wasted, I've misused opportunities. And if we all hanker, then let me hanker for the association of sadhus, that now I'll come to my right senses. And if we want to cry, then we need to cry, dear Lord, once and for all. Like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj gives this amazing prayer in his last spiritual warrior book. You know, for so many lifetimes, I've run on my intelligence, trying to decide what's good for me. You know what I want, but you actually know what I need. So just once and for all, give me that which I really need so that I thereby can come closer to you. So thank you very much for so patiently hearing me. It was very, you know, exciting and wonderful to do this service because you've got such receptive ears and your hearts are so, you know, dedicated to bhakti, and otherwise it wouldn't have been possible to have this loving exchange. This is one of the loving exchanges. And I just have this appeal, my dear brothers, uncles, fathers, sons, my dear sisters, mothers, aunties, please bless me with your well wishes that at the moment of my death, I will be able to focus on the lotus feet of our beloved Lord, Shyam, Radhe Shyam, and my benevolent lotus feet of my spiritual master, so that we all can come to this ultimate success. So thank you very much. I don't know if I can dare ask for questions. Can I? It's 8:45. I'm not sure what time I was supposed to stop. What happens now? Any comment or question?
Yeah.
Okay, Prabhu.
Thank you very much. What a wonderful exposition.
Hare Krishna,
because
thank you.
This is a very important topic.
Yeah, it's so important.
Without women, without mothers, what can you
do? Yes, yes. Thank you, Prabhu. Yes, and she's selfless. She's selfless. There's no agenda.
I tell you,
Yeah.
When I was only 5 years old,
yeah.
My mother used to tell me, if you don't become a devotee, you have to go to another womb, which can be an animal womb or a human womb.
See?
You have this one. And she used to say, Punarami Janani Yatra Shenam, Raya Marari Raya Raya.
Look
at that. I still remember
that.
And my elder sister was sick in bed. She would always tell me, come on, do your book.
Right, right.
Always thinking.
Just see.
How to advance.
All glories to your mother. Now you're in such advanced old age and still her words are resonating in your heart.
And
so all glories to mothers. Huh? This is the true mother.
And as you said, we are getting degradation day by day, degradation in Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
More and more time.
Yes, time. Yes.
So more and more degradation.
Yes, it's a fact. Yes, exactly. So now what we're in Kali Yuga, you see, so it's a degraded age, but there's this one wonderful thing. And this is a little secret here that I'm revealing. If, despite the fact that we're in Kali Yuga, if you can chant 16 rounds every day without offense, Nirapada, Namaloy, Krishna Prema Dana, if you chant without offense, you definitely will get Krishna Prema. And if you follow the four regulated principles, Kali Yuga can have no effect on you whatsoever.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Srila Prabhupada is a special person.
Yeah.
A special person who came for our upliftment.
Yes.
Otherwise,
yes. We're so fortunate.
Down.
Yes. So, Prabhu, I think there's a couple more hands. Yes.
Yeah, you were saying before that if a woman, Brahmana, or a cow is doing something wrong, then the protectors are responsible, is that?
Yes.
The
Kshatriyas, the king, the Grihasthas, you know, the Brahmanas, they, and Krishna, of course, directly, but Brahmanas, they are only speaking for the spiritual upliftment of society. They only beg for what they need. So they're always taken care of, especially by the kings and the governments and like that. So they are responsible. Yes? Yeah. Yes, yes. Yes, absolutely. It's a lot of trouble if you can avoid it. Prabhupada says Grihastha Ashram progress is very slow. So if you can, but then be true, be a true brahmachari, be a true vanaprastha, true sannyasi. Yeah. No, that's irresponsible. You have to take the responsibility. You can't cheat. You know, have your foot in both boats, you know, a little bit this, a little bit this. No, you have to be honest. If there's, if it's within your capacity, if that is your dharma, if that's what your parents would like, if your guru is instructing you in that way, then you have to accept that responsibility as service. See, it's not a decision. Oh, will I enjoy this way or will I enjoy that way? Which way will I be more happy and comfortable? Well, if I'm on my own, I've got the bed to myself. But if I'm married, you know, like, be careful. Again, what is the motivation? You have to see any ashram as a service opportunity. And actually, a true grihastha is greater than a sannyasi. Because sannyasis, they keep away from women. They don't even look at them. They keep them at a very distance. They only surround themselves by brahmacharis and men, generally, you see, right? But in the grihastha ashram, you're with her all the time. You're with the children all the time. And you have to have this service attitude. It's a service. It's a responsibility. And not just for your family. It's a responsibility for the society at large. To make the whole human society stable and progressive, you need to take that responsibility. You mustn't shun it. And you have to do it soberly. Yes, Matadi? Exactly. Yes, exactly. Exactly, because let's face it. Yes. 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 Principles. You see, and that's the thing, that's the challenge. It's a huge topic, because actually the fact is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, mostly everybody ends up in the Grihastha ashram. So to get training how to be a paka, you know, proper Grihastha, is essential. And then you do your best. And then pray like anything. Right? Because whatever partner you get, whatever children you get, they're instruments of the Lord to propel you closer to Krishna. Like here, see, we can talk hours together. Here, Devahuti, she was assured because she followed, that was before, she was in I think in the chapter before, because she followed this Dharma to the letter. Then her husband protected her, not just with material comforts, but he gave her fearlessness of material existence. Yes. And then she was rewarded. She qualified to invite a son like Kapila Dev, who then gives her further instructions. Yes. You see? So the whole system is very beautiful. And definitely we need to accept it and practice it, and we'll make the whole world more stable. But yet at the same time, we're hearing these classes every day, not to get caught up in the glamour of it. You know, like I was at an initiation ceremony one time. It was a Russian spiritual master. So naturally it was all these young Russian ladies and Prabhus also taking initiation. No, he wasn't. He was from Germany, but this was in Russia. And it was an initiation, and all the girls were dressed up like anything, you know, with gopi dots and all the glitter and everything like that, which even I found amusing. And he even said before he started the initiation, "What's this? They're all dressed up like Christmas trees. This is an initiation. This is an initiation. It's a very sober moment of surrender to the feet of the spiritual master. It's not a fashion statement. Hello?" You know, like this kind of Bollywood dancing that we're having in some of the Harinams. And, yeah, okay, maybe it has its place. I don't know. I won't get into it too much. But we need to be always very diligent. What is it we're doing? What are we advertising? All right. I think I'll get my head cut off if I speak anymore. I'll get my head probably cut off anyway because of the topic. Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Go Premananda, all glories to the assembled devotees. Hari Hari Bol, Hari Bol.